Have you heard of doctors like Dr. Sebi?
Yes.
Why do they kill all holistic doctors?
Messing up the medical industry.
You short-stopping that grind. Why do niggas get killed for hustling in front of a nigga's spot?
4 years ago this month, that Dr. Gonzalez was found dead. There was no indication that he had any health problems.
They were paying scientists. Doctors were smoking.
And your dad came along with your son. Yeah. And
Nipsey or some hip-hop artist was...
in America. But unfortunately, this is also the land of junk food. You want fast food, convenience food, fake food of all different kinds. It's everywhere you go. You get hit with messages to eat it.
This is the Dean.
Greens of peace. How you guys doing? Welcome to the Dean Show, and I got the guru of health, former. You like that one, Jim? How you doing?
I'm doing great, Eddie. Good to see you again.
I can see you because you have, black belts and you have grandmasters. Mm-hmm. I consider you the grandmaster of nutrition, former chief nutritionist for Dr. Mercola at his
Optimal Wellness Center when we were one of the busiest nutrition-based health centers in the country because of the popularity of his website.
So you know, strangers to the Dean Show, we've had you on many times. I want to start off with the story. And it was when I called you about a year ago, and you've been kind of, educating a lot of the viewers, and you've been in this field for over 30, close to 40 years now?
Well, I've been doing nutrition and health educating on a professional level since 1985, so 34 years.
34 years. Mm-hmm. I called you up, and I wanted to get your advice. I'm at the airport. I'm about to hit a flight, and I usually opt out of the full body scanners. And it can kind of be uncomfortable because you're the only one opting out. There's thousands, people, you can imagine there's thousands of people going through the lines, and you're the only one that puts his hand up and says, I'd like to opt out.
You're doing the healthy thing, though.
So it's, I called you, and I was like, it was one of those where sometimes you're rushing, you don't want to go through it. Am I just being paranoid? So I was about to not opt out. And there's been times when I just went through it because, I'm running late and I don't want to, there's a big line, and now you got to wait for someone to come and pat you down. Mm-hmm. So then I called you up, and we all need this motivation sometimes. So I called you and said, hey, what should I do? I wanted to get your advice. I thought maybe I'm being overly paranoid. And then come to know, because that has to do with the scanners, Europe officially banned those body scanners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wasn't aware of that. But
what do you think about that one?
I think that's healthy.
But every time I'd ask the people when I get opt out, I say, I say, hey, this is for health purposes. I want to protect and honor my body. Yeah. Be faithful to that.
You didn't mention what my advice to you was.
That's why I want you to get into it.
Well, you tell the viewers. No, what my advice to you.
Go ahead.
Well, I said, don't allow yourself to be zapped.
Don't allow yourself to be zapped.
No, it's accept the conventional pat down. Let them frisk you, don't allow yourself to be zapped.
Yeah, you told me to get opt out. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I haven't done airline travel since 2010 was the last time I did it for my own values. I just refused to submit myself to being treated like a criminal, to have to board a jet. But I understand, many people, including Dr. Grasso and Dr. Garcia, who travel a lot, traveling is not important for my lifestyle. For many people it is, and I can appreciate that, but it is a situation, has been for a long time now, that you're required to submit yourself to be in, if not zapped, then frisked and searched as if you are a criminal. And I just will not submit myself. But then again, as I said, traveling is not important for my lifestyle. But if it is important for your lifestyle, I think the healthier option is to just let someone frisk you, let someone, do a manual search rather than zapping yourself. Because at the very least, that's another way that your biology will be stressed.
Why would they ban it there but not ban it here?
Higher level of consciousness, higher level of concern for, you know, the realities of what they're subjecting people to. So
didn't Europe also ban GMOs? Most of Europe, they don't, with Monsanto, but over here we let it go?
Well, they started here, of course. They were the genetically modified crops that were made to be compatible with the poison known as glyphosate, which the commercial name is Roundup Ready. It is a poison, mm-hmm. and anytime you're killing something, whether you're killing weeds or whether you're killing bugs, whether you're killing bacteria, anytime you're killing any type of living organism, obviously you need to have a poisoning effect. And so it started in this country, and they've been pushed very heavily. In other countries, like you mentioned, Europe, I don't know specifically what the policy is in the European Union, but it's not as prevalent. And I think it's there's very little of it actually going on in countries like Russia. In fact, I wasn't prepared to specifically discuss this issue, but I think if you look it up, you'd find that the United States of America is basically GMO and glyphosate central.
Yeah, it's interesting that, you know, in a lot of the popular brands, you have the EWG.
Environmental Working Group.
Yes, exactly. Right. And then they release some new studies, and they found that the level that would be acceptable of, I mean, I would just think like any kind of, you drink some water and you know that there's someone urinates, just a little urine comes in your water, no one's going to drink that. But you think about if someone put some poison in your cereal, kids' cereal, mm-hmm. but they found, the EWG, and when in the studies that in the major brands of Quaker Oats, and you have some of these like Honey Nut Cheerios, Natural Valley, chocolate peanut butter Cheerios, and the list goes on, that they had 230 times greater amount exposure level in Monsanto's Roundup, the glyphosate, and this is carcinogen, this can actually lead to cancer. They have it in these kids' cereals.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Well, it's being found in basically all aspects of the environment and the marketplace, because there are thousands. I think it's even appropriate to mention millions of tons of this stuff are sprayed every year in this country.
Yeah,
and so human beings need to remember. Very, very important. This is something that Native American culture tried to teach the white man, the European people in this country in the 19th century. What they tried to teach the white people is a basic truth about life on this planet, which is this: whatever you do to the earth, you ultimately do to yourself. You cannot pollute the air you breathe without ultimately polluting yourself. You cannot pollute the water that you consume without polluting yourself. You cannot pollute the land in which you grow your food without polluting yourself. There was appreciation about the web of life and how, again, whatever you do to the earth, you ultimately do to yourself.
Yeah.
And so this is so fundamentally important to be aware of. And if you have this awareness, I think naturally with that awareness comes a respect for how you interact with your environment.
Wow.
And what you do to your environment. And if you understand that, if you're generating air pollution, water pollution, or polluting your land, and ultimately you're going to be polluting yourself, I think you're going to be a lot more conscientious, a lot more conscientious and a lot more reluctant to pollute mm-hmm. the environment that you're living in.
Yeah, wow, that's like you're reminding us of, that's what we call the sunnah, the way of the sunnah. This is like the way that we're taught that you're to not only, like you say, develop, we should, as human beings, develop this nutritional integrity, care for ourselves, our environment, for humanity. But when it's profits over people, when it comes down, yeah. when people don't live yeah. for a higher purpose, just for the money becomes their deity, you see.
Yeah.
They just live for the dollar.
That's very sad when that does happen.
Yeah.
But anyway, Eddie, I want to thank you for mentioning one of my favorite phrases and subjects, nutritional integrity.
Yeah.
Which
I mentioned it a lot. I got that from you. Yes. Fake food. Like the people know, I'm always saying eat real food, fake food, developing nutritional integrity. This is the man we're getting it from. Yeah.
Well, nutritional integrity is something that the world is in very...
you're the food. You're the mufti sheikh. So we call you the okay. the sheikh is like the, you know, the teacher. Like you know, mufti is like the born above the teacher. So I say grandmaster mufti of the food of the nutrition.
So in what is nutritional integrity all about? Just to remind people of the practical meaning of developing your nutritional integrity. First of all, integrity is basically all about being honest with other people, being honest with yourself. And when you're eating fake food, you know, pizza and all kind of, you know, junk, you know, it's like you're lying to your body. You're putting in, when I used to eat the fake food before I knew better, you know, I was like every time I would eat fast food burgers with French fries, you know, it was like I was lying to my body. But when you're eating real food, you're being honest with your body. You're honoring your body's biological needs for real nutrition.
Yeah.
But so nutritional integrity is all about not only being honest with your body, but specifically it's all about setting standards for what is acceptable, real food and drink for your body, and then being faithful to those standards that you set for yourself, rather than eating like what I grew up eating and what I think is very common for people that grow up in America. You know, the first 20 years of my life, I grew up eating the anything goes diet. You know, the anything goes diet is, you know, you're hungry and you eat whatever, it doesn't matter. You have no standards. It's just whatever you have a taste for, whatever's most convenient, whatever other people are eating around you in a social situation, with basically no attention to nutrition. You know, I grew up eating the anything goes diet and I suffered for it. The very first time I was on the Dean Show, I talked about how the reason I started studying nutrition
yeah.
In 1977, at the age of 20, was because I reached a point in my life where I was sick and tired of being sick and tired all the time. You know, the anything goes diet had taken its toll on me. And we all have our tolerance for how much nutritional abuse our body can take. Some people, you know, it takes a lot longer before it starts causing their body to start breaking down in various ways. With me, I think in retrospect, it was a blessing that, you know, I suffered so much at a relatively young age and then, you know, started waking up, 42 years ago at the age of 20. And that was the beginning of me, you know.
That's what kicked off where you're at today. That was the catalyst that
Well,
had
where
you
I've been for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, I went from being sick and tired of being sick and tired all the time to, you know, achieving and sustaining a very high level of health for many, many decades.
Are you the guy from the juice man juice? The guy who's, you know, he's glowing from all the juicing? You know the guy?
You're talking about Jake Cordish, juice man?
Juice man.
Yeah, yeah, God bless him. He died a few years ago at the age of, I think it was 90-something.
No, I'm joking. That's not you, but he's you're not just into also juicing, but just eating real food, eating healthy food. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with when someone, because you're really into eggs, mm-hmm. like that's one form of nutrition, mm-hmm. But many people now, when you bring this up, they're really worried about the cholesterol, the fat mm-hmm. in the eggs. It's something that scares people. Like too many eggs, you're gonna have a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say to that?
Mm-hmm. It's possible to overconsume any particular nutrient. Cholesterol is a nutrient. Your body naturally makes it. It's essential for life. and it's possible to overconsume fat. What I see people overconsuming far more commonly, though, when I work with them, especially indications of this in blood test results, is the most common overconsumption is the overconsumption of carbohydrates, especially processed sugars and processed starches.
Didn't you have the sugar industry actually paid off? They end up paying off, and they started to blame fat. This was uncovered that the scientists, they were, you know about this, right?
Yeah. So any time you're over-consuming any nutrient that can have value for your body, if you're over-consuming protein, fats, or carbohydrates, especially those are the macronutrients, that's where we get our calories. Those are also used as building blocks for our body. But anytime you're over-consuming something that is essential for your biology, the very first consequence is going to be it's going to hurt your energy. So, you know, in regard to your nutritional practices and other self-care practices, you always need to correlate your practices with your current level of health. You know, if you're in really good health, if you experience peaceful energy, relaxed alertness, emotional poise, positive stable mood, great mental clarity, your digestion and elimination is good, you sleep well at night, you know, you look good, you feel good, you know, by all means, stick with what you're doing. But if you're not satisfied with your level of health, if you have this nagging feeling that something is off, something is wrong, you need to change something, you need to add something to your life, you need to subtract something from your life to make it easier for your body to be healthier, well then, you know, I think one of the things you want to do is take a very honest and careful look at what you have been eating and drinking, and it's very likely going to be appropriate for you to make some changes. There are some general nutritional practices that are applicable to everybody. For instance, the most basic one is eat real food, don't eat fake food. You know?
Yeah, I call it the white belt level. That's where everyone needs to start.
Yes, and but as far as, like you mentioned, eggs, yes, I'm a big fan of egg nutrition, especially raw egg nutrition from healthy chickens, as I demonstrated on the Dean Show not too long ago. The consumption of raw egg nutrition warrior style. And last week I brought you a supply of fresh eggs from my organic farmer connection where I get my eggs, and you enjoy those eggs too. And also
we met one of your, was he clients that actually he had Crohn's disease?
That's right.
And he's healed from it.
Yes. Yes. He's experiencing a wonderful upswing in his health.
Is that something where the conventional medicine will say that's unhealable? You cannot. That's not sustainable. I met him. He said
right.
he. Did, wait.
Yeah.
Is it right that
and
I'm
he was a former student of yours?
Yeah, he used to train jiu-jitsu also. Very nice. What's his name again?
Yeah, Chris.
Chris, very nice brother. Very nice man.
Yes.
He was getting the eggs from you.
And Chris has become a wonderful example of someone who has developed a very high level of nutritional integrity.
Yeah.
And nutritional integrity, when you have that, it's like a shield that you carry with you everywhere you go in the land of junk food, because, you know, that's one of the ways that I think it's appropriate to describe America. America, of course, is a great country. There's a lot of good things in America, but unfortunately, this is also the land of junk food. You want fast food, convenience food, fake food of all different kinds. It's everywhere you go. You get hit with messages to eat it on an ongoing basis. If you're in social situations, that's mostly what dominates. And so when you carry your nutritional integrity with you everywhere you go, it's like a shield against the fake food, because when it's like it's been offered to me many, many times over the years, I just smile and I say thank you, but no thank you.
Here's the confusing part, because the people that are supposed to be there, the respected physicians who are there, when people go with these problems, obesity, diabetes, these health concerns, they go to their doctor. What you're talking about, they're not hearing it from the top of the elite. Mm-hmm. The doctors are supposed to be the medical doctors, the elite people of health. But they don't address these things that we're talking about today.
Yeah.
The majority, what is it, like 99% don't address these things. There are really good doctors out there.
Like Dr. Medea Saeed that you had on the program not too long ago.
Yeah, holistic. She's a holistic doctor also.
Very nutritionally educated and minded. Yes. And she gives, she basically teaches people
Dr.
how to
Medea
eat.
Saeed, yes. Yeah.
She teaches people how to eat healthier and how to live healthier. So she,
there are doctors like that.
Yes.
But how do when people usually go to the doctor, they're not taught this. They're not sat down. They see they've done studies where, you know, you come in and doctors tell us this also. They got like 7 minutes to see you, like to diagnose the problem, 5 to 7 minutes.
Right. Yeah.
That's not going to happen that fast, is it?
No, it takes time to educate
and then,
people.
And then
the system has been developed that is conducive to basically writing prescriptions for drugs. And so that's...
But what does MD stand for?
Well, my friend Max says more drugs.
More drugs?
as opposed to ND, which no drugs. ND is referring to a naturopathic.
Someone else took it to a higher level, said master drug dealer.
Master drug dealer, okay.
No, well, no, there are a lot of good doctors who are taking it, and we want doctors to take it to the next level because it's continuing education that's important. So there are doctors who are limited, who are saying, man, our hands are tied, right? They don't learn nutrition in medical school. They don't know this, and now they have so many patients to see, and they'll get in trouble if they don't fill the quota. Why aren't you prescribing these drugs? They got 300,000-400,000. They're enslaved by debt.
Yeah.
And they're stuck. Their hands are tied. It's the people above who are pulling the strings.
That's right, Eddie. Yeah. Yeah, it's the doctors who went to medical school with good intentions to learn how to help people. I appreciate that a lot of them maintain their good intentions. Like my sister. My sister is an MD. She's an MD. She does urgent care pediatric. My sister is certainly a good person, and you know, and she.
Tell us that story that happened with your sister about you were reading the blood work, with the sodium or something.
Okay,
you spotted it. What happened with that?
Well,
now she's a doctor. She's a medical doctor, and then.
Well, this has to do with. The knowledge and understanding that I've gained over the years and learning how to make the most of blood test results as opposed to medical doctors seem to specialize in making the least of blood test results. In regards to back to my days as chief nutritionist at Dr. McCullough's Optimal Wellness Center and even before that, I had heard from many people who sought out my nutrition and health building guidance, and they had blood work done. And usually the scenario went like this. Someone was not feeling well. They contacted a doctor, wound up having blood testing. And when it came time for them to find out about their blood test results, it was very, very common for them to be told that everything was fine. Everything is normal. Even if they didn't feel fine, and even if they felt lousy, they were told everything was fine. Everything was normal. And then they would show me their blood test results, and I would see from the knowledge and understanding that I have about blood test interpretation.
How many have you over the years read blood tests?
Oh,
approximately
thousands. And
thousands.
Oh, sure. That okay. was so. That was at Dr. McCullough's Optimal Wellness.
Thousands
Center,
you've read.
I was the guy who had the responsibility to teach other practitioners how to interpret blood test results from a holistic perspective and from a nutritional perspective. I was responsible for teaching all of the other practitioners who needed to know this. How to do it and how to make the most of blood test results. Helping people to understand their own blood test results is very worthwhile, very enjoyable, in fact, because most people don't know anything about their own blood test results. And I'd like to empower people to at least have some basic understanding about what is being measured and what the measures are indicating to me with my knowledge and understanding about how to make the most of blood test results. So just to finish this, Eddie, so, you know, they were told, it's very common, it's like the vast majority of the time when people do blood testing, they're told everything is fine, everything is normal. Again, even if they feel lousy, then they show me the same blood test, and I see everything is not fine, everything is not normal. And I see, very commonly, I see indications to me that they've been over-consuming carbohydrates for their metabolism, which will hurt their energy. Their under-consuming protein is fairly common. I see indications of stress on their immune system, which sometimes is related to the fact that they have a toxic tooth in their mouth, a root canal treated tooth, which that was an issue that you had. And I see other indications on their blood tests that they have some weaknesses and imbalances and there's room for improvement. So getting back to my mom, so in early 2015, my mom, who was at that time was 80 years of age, she was not doing well. She was she was losing energy. She was feeling weak. And one morning she got out of bed and she collapsed. And she went to her.
This is your mother now.
This is my mom. She went to her doctor, who she'd been connected with for a while. And this doctor did very comprehensive blood testing on my mom. And when it came to my mom finding out about her blood test results, my mom was told everything was fine, everything was normal. And then my brother called me to let me know my mom has blood work and that I certainly wanted to see it. And so I got over there as soon as I could. But before I got over there, my sister, who's an MD and who loves her mother, so no question about that, she looked at my mom's blood test results. And she also told my mom everything was fine, everything was normal. And I looked at my mom's blood test results, and everything was not fine. Everything was not normal. In fact, the biggest issue on my mom's blood test result was that she had a very low level of the essential electrolyte in our blood. It's always routinely done in blood chemistry. Her sodium level was really low. It was only 128, and the bottom of the lab reference range on this particular blood test was 134. So my mom was well below the bottom of the lab reference range. It got tagged as low by the lab, and both her medical doctor and her daughter, who's a doctor who loves her, either they didn't see this, they missed it, they didn't look at the blood test results carefully enough, or they didn't understand the importance of this. But there is a specific medical term for a really low sodium level, and it's a hypo, that is low, natremia, okay? If your sodium level in your blood is too low, you'll feel really weak. And that's what happened to my mom. So anyway, there were other issues on my mom's blood test. It wasn't just that. There were a number of other issues. She was deficient in magnesium. She had indications of some stress on her kidneys, and she had a number of other issues. So I gave my mom recommendations, nutritional recommendations, to strengthen her where she was weak, to balance her where she was out of balance. And, of course, you know, she being my mom, she doesn't follow all my recommendations, so only about half of them. But in 3 days, my mom was revitalized. And two of the recommendations I gave her were to do some raw egg smoothies, okay, raw egg with like banana and some strawberries, which is just a delicious combination.
Very delicious.
But she needed to give her body more very high quality protein and fat nutrition, and when the protein and fat nutrition are not heat damaged, I've seen from clinical experience that there potentially is greater biological value there. So she did the raw egg smoothies, she did some fresh vegetable juice, and I had her start adding some good quality sea salt to her food, you know, to taste, you know, trust your own instinct as far as how much to use. But she obviously needed to get some, give her body more good quality sodium to work with. And in 3 days following half of my recommendations, she was revitalized. And so that was especially enjoyable for me. to see that. And to this day, my mom is doing very well, considering that now she's going to be, this year, she is going to be 85 in November. Yes.
So how do you get past this when you have organizations saying that, specific organizations saying that, look, avocados are bad for you, but box cereals are good for you?
Who says avocados are bad for you?
Right. You know, where you have, you know, our friend Chris also, he talks about this, where certain health organizations, yeah, he mentions even the Food and Drug Administration, you know, yeah, they'll come out and they'll warn people. This is one example he's given countless times about avocados because of the fat content in
there. Oh,
yeah. Right?
Yeah.
So now, but box cereals, right,
yeah,
are good for you. But then you look back and you uncover, you unfold like an onion, right?
Yeah.
You unfold and then, yeah, the smell comes, it starts, the potency starts coming out. You start to see these layers and layers. Why, and these are facts, this is not conspiracy or anything, where you have, you know, scientists who are paid off by the sugar industry. And we know what sugar, I'm not talking about natural sugars, you know, found in honey or dates or whatnot, but the sugar, processed, refined sugars, the fake foods that's pumped into 500,000 of the fake food items out there. And now they start promoting this stuff, right? Yeah. They start, Fed Up is a great documentary that exposes this also. So now you have these organizations who are out there supposed to be helping and guiding humanity. Now we're actually getting, in most cases, bad advice. Then it's uncovered that these scientists, just like the nicotine industry, they were paying scientists, doctors were smoking. Now you have this with the sugar industry paying scientists, and now they're basically lying, right? Lying, and then they're promoting the fake foods and saying the good foods that the Creator has given us, you know, you should be careful of eating of, like, avocados with the fat kind of eggs that you keep promoting, and things that go more in line with common sense.
Yeah, I especially enjoyed the egg party we had outside of your school last week when I brought the eggs, and I brought some eggs also,
and my father
for Chris, and your dad came along with your son, and
egg party,
and your dad started passing out eggs for everybody to have, and we were all doing the raw egg nutrition warrior style, except for you, because here's a prime example of how there is no one specific food that is going to be universally beneficial for everybody, because it's possible for any given individual to have an allergy to any given food, which means that your immune system is reacting to the protein fraction of a food, or sometimes food is not right for someone because they can't digest it well. Like some people have what is known as lactose intolerance, and they can't digest that well, that particular milk sugar well, or like someone who eats beans or legumes, and they get a lot of gas and bloating from eating those foods because of the type of carbohydrates that are in those foods. In my experience, when someone is in need of enhancing their health, building their health, they're not satisfied with their level of health, I've seen much greater value with raw egg nutrition, of course, always from healthy, happy chickens.
Not conventional chickens, obviously.
No, not from the factory farms. That's risky. But when you're getting organic chickens that are allowed to eat the foods, they naturally have the instinct to eat, which is that is they have access to open pasture, so they get to forage for whatever plant foods they want, and also, you know, they get to eat as many insects as they can get their beaks on, because that's actually a chicken's very best food, best source of protein and essential fatty acids and vitamin B12. So you know, it's fundamentally important to really only eat animal foods from healthy, humanely raised, and also, you know, humanely killed animals. This is one of the reasons I have basic appreciation for halal
practices. Yeah.
Did you
see what happened recently in Indiana?
And you're quite accomplished at doing that properly. I've seen you in action, especially you know, at the little farm that you have in preparation for a holiday.
Yeah. Did you see recently what happened? They had it on the news. They had an organization going undercover, and they were exposing what is actually going on with many of these cows, these calves, you know, the brutality. And
yeah, it's
you've seen that? Did you read
Well, that's nothing new about that, Eddie. The god-awful conditions of the commercial factory farms and the feedlots has been documented. Going back over 100 years, there was an investigative journalist at the, I think it was the first decade of the 20th century, he had written an expose on the realities of the commercial factory farm feedlot industry. Maybe it'll come to me in a moment, but his name and the title of his book was is not something that's coming to mind right now. This is over 100 years ago. It was identified how barbaric the commercial factory farms were. Because unfortunately, this again gets back to the issue of people not having a connection to other forms of life. And it's just like as everything got industrialized and and as the commercial feedlot beef industry especially got bigger and bigger and bigger, it was operated with less and less consciousness and more and more carelessly, and the animals were just treated more and more inhumanely.
Yeah, this goes back to what, that high level, we call it taqwa. This is when people, they make the ultimate goal is just business, money. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's nothing wrong with business, but when there's no integrity, you talk about nutritional integrity,
right.
It's health integrity, life integrity that you have good business ethics. You're not just blinded by the dollar and mm-hmm. just, the end goal is the profits, the bottom line.
Yeah.
And then the bottom line at the end, there's another example we've seen, like they had in all the fitness magazines that a little bit of wine, a little bit of, is good for the health. But then recently, World Health Organization, they produced that no amount of alcohol is good for human consumption. Right.
Oh, I support that.
No amount. So now you see these facts coming out. But a lot of times, you go to, again, it goes back to we gained some wisdom from that's what we want to derive. Some of the things we talked about: eating fake food, avoiding fake food. We talked about the first thing, opting out of DNA damage that was banned in Europe. Right. So now it's banned here. That's another good piece of advice. To go for the pat down. The other thing you had mentioned is blood work. It's so important. So how much blood work does the average doctor, where would you recommend them to go then for blood work, for a good reading of blood work? A functional medicine doctor? What would you
recommend? You'll be more likely to really get some value from giving some of your precious blood and going through the time and expense of generating blood test results. You're not likely to get much value at all from going through a blood testing process, unless you have something just really blatant and glaringly, either way too high or way too low as far as a blood test value, but. I wonder how many of the viewers who are going to be watching this episode have experienced already in their life what I call with some humor, some intentional humor, what I call the big medical blow-off in regard to blood test results. That's when people are told everything is fine, everything is normal, even when they feel lousy and they don't feel fine. They don't feel so-called normal. And then when someone who really has some depth or their knowledge and understanding about what's really being measured on a blood test and how those particular measures will be influenced by self-care practices, such as what people are eating and drinking, and you take the time to carefully look at those results. After all, someone has given some of their precious blood and gone through the time and expense to generate these test results. And if you really understand what you're looking at and you take the time to really carefully look, I teach there's a potential treasure of information there in regard to what's going on with your basic and vital blood chemistry and blood cell values that are being measured. And there's a lot of potential, very valuable information in regards to not only where you have problems, but I always enjoy, looking at blood test results and explaining them to people, I always enjoy explaining to people where they're strong, where you have strength, where you have good balance, and then also, as needed, where you're less than strong, where you have room for improvement, where you have some weakness, where you have some imbalance. And blood test results have helped me for many, many years. At Dr. McCullough's, he did very comprehensive blood testing, and he was very supportive of all of his practitioners taking the time to make the most of the results that were generated. In fact, we would dedicate at least one whole session, 45 minutes at least, to explaining blood test results to people to help them better understand themselves and where they're strong, where they're in balance, but also where they're not so strong, where they have some weakness, where they have some imbalances. And it was a motivating factor for people. But unfortunately, I include in what I call the big medical blow off in regard to blood test results is, if a person is not told everything is fine, everything is normal, the other most common experience is they're not told anything at all about their blood test results. Nothing. Which gives them the assumption that, well, everything must be fine, or they would have called me. I've looked at a number of blood test results, again, going back to my days, even before it was work for Dr. McCullough, looking at blood test results where the lab clearly tagged a particular value out of the reference range, either on the high side or the low side, and the practitioner that the person did the blood testing through didn't even comment on it. Uh-huh. Nothing. They just completely blew it off.
Yeah.
And right. Mm-hmm. That's not right. If you're gonna have someone go through the time and expense of giving some of their precious blood to generate results, I don't understand why you wouldn't want to make the most of those results. I think Dr. Medea Saeed would agree with me and have a deep appreciation for what I'm saying.
I brought up, and this is why I brought up the alcohol example, was because I think this was in the Lancet that they did this study with every 10 seconds someone is dying from alcohol related deaths. Just like the sugar industry, they ended up paying the scientists to go ahead and label fat and these natural fats as bad, and then people get scared from this. Same thing was going on with the nicotine industry. Same thing with the alcohol industry. Yeah. They were paying these scientists. So human beings can be bought, people who don't have integrity, who worship the dollar. Let me ask you something else. I guarantee that, and this is a simple change. You see, when you get educated, right, we call with people sunnah, that people, you should be ready to adjust towards the good and leave off something that's of no benefit and then substitute it with something that you can have more tremendous benefit from and protect you and your family from harm. Why do they have, and I guarantee probably 99% of people are using toothpaste that has fluoride in it and their kids, but I challenge you right now, if you just take that toothpaste and you turn it to the back and read the warning, mm-hmm. and it says, if swallowed,
if more than used for brushing, and the amount that they're referring to is a pea-sized amount.
Yeah.
Of toothpaste.
Pay attention here now.
Not an ice cream scoop amount that is, you see in the television commercials. No, they're referring to a pea-sized amount of the toothpaste. If more than is used for brushing, that's the amount they're referring to, more than a pea-sized amount is accidentally swallowed, contact a poison control center right away.
Contact poison control.
That's the acknowledgement.
Go take your toothpaste right now
On every Colgate boxer tube of fluoridated toothpaste, you'll see that warning.
That's 99% of toothpaste out there.
Well, if it's got fluoride in it.
Which 99% do.
Well, it's common. It is a very common ingredient. But this is a much taken for granted acknowledgement that fluoride can have a poisoning effect on our body.
Yeah. So now your kids are obviously, many of them are swallowing this stuff, right? Because they're
inadvertently. Yes. And it's been definitively proven, especially in recent years. Harvard School of Public Health, environmental health sciences. It's been definitively proven, and actually, this is reinforced all the time, that there is a very strong correlation between the levels of fluoride that children are consuming and a child's intelligence, specifically their IQ. The higher the level of fluoride that a child is consuming, the lower their IQ.
Why do they put it in this if this is the risk of damaging one's intelligence, their IQ, their health? But the argument is there is just enough that will strengthen your teeth and it's not harmful. You've heard the argument for it?
For fluoride?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. So, yeah, it's a prime example of propaganda because it's not based on science. They don't have truth on their side. But, there's big money pushing, the fluoridation of water agenda. See,
it goes back to what we're talking about, profits over health, over people.
Yeah, well, fluoride is the most protected pollutant in the history of the world. In fact, some truth about fluoride beyond the propaganda that very few people are familiar with is that fluoride is the main pollutant that is generated by basically all industries that mine the earth for raw material. Fluoride is a naturally occurring element in the earth's crust. On the periodic table of elements, it's listed as fluorine. Fluorine is the pure element. Fluorine in its pure form is a very caustic, very toxic, yellowish gas. And it's the most highly reactive element on the periodic table of elements. In fact, it is so highly reactive, pure fluorine does not occur naturally in the earth. It's always found in combination with another element. For instance, fluorine, when it combines with sodium, it produces sodium fluoride. When it combines with calcium, it produces calcium fluoride. Fluoride is not a nutrient for the human body. It is a toxin. All major industries that mine the earth for raw materials, like the aluminum industry, the phosphate fertilizer industry, they all generate as their primary waste product, their pollutant, various types of fluoride compounds. And to make a very long Machiavellian and labyrinthian story short, during World War II, where the first experiments were done with fluoridating water because it was hoped that because there was all this fluoride pollution being generated, especially during the armaments buildup of World War II, and there were more and more lawsuits being filed against fluoride polluting industries for the fluoride pollution was causing damage to agricultural crops. It was actually injuring, maiming animals that were where people had farms that were close to a fluoride pollution generating industry like an aluminum manufacturing plant or a phosphate fertilizer industry, or there's any industry that mines the earth for raw materials is going to be generating some fluoride pollution as in their refinement processes. They're going to be generating some fluoride pollution. And so there were more and more lawsuits being generated or being filed against these fluoride polluting industries. And so, again, to make a very long story short, government and industry basically conspired, and that is the right word, conspired. And there is evidence proving this. They conspired to create a new image for fluoride. This is how they handled the ever-increasing number of lawsuits against industries that generate fluoride as a natural pollutant in their extraction and refinement processes. What they decided to do was to tell people that the fluoride is good for you. It's not a pollutant. It doesn't cause harm. It's good for you. In fact, it's so good for you, we're going to add it to your drinking water. And if you want to get into the details of this, there was a book that came out. This is the definitive book about the history, the economics, the science, and the politics of fluoride. The book was called The Case Against Fluoride, written by a chemistry professor by the name of Paul Conant and a couple of his colleagues. The book has hundreds, if not thousands, of references for the information, knowledge, and understanding in the book. And The Case Against Fluoride by Paul Conant is subtitled with a very important truth about fluoride beyond the propaganda. And the subtitle of The Case Against Fluoride is How Hazardous Waste Ended Up in Our Drinking Water and the Bad Science and Powerful Politics That Keeps It There. Mm-hmm. Now you're really getting onto the truth about fluoride and why it's been so heavily promoted.
A lot of these things, they're not hard to uncover. You just got to do a little bit of research, and the facts are there.
Yeah, well, you gotta go beyond the propaganda. You gotta start asking questions rather than just accepting, you know, the mainstream propaganda about anything. You know, if you really want to get educated, ask questions and go beyond the mainstream propaganda. Yeah. And that's what that if it's mainstream, it's a, in my experience, in my life experience, there's much more likely to be an agenda behind what is being promoted to the public. It's more likely to be appropriately considered propaganda, which is propaganda is the definition of that is this is misleading and highly biased information to convince people of a particular point of view or a particular agenda that someone's trying to promote. But propaganda is not used to represent the truth.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I think is important to understand is that in the history of the story of fluoride, is that when the United States government decided to push the fluoridation of water as a national agenda, that started in 1950. Isn't it interesting that the person that they called upon to help them promote the value of water fluoridation to the American public was a man who had actually written a book in 1928 called Propaganda. And that man's name is Edward Bernays. And Edward Bernays is regarded as the original spin doctor is one of the names for him. He was one of the fundamental developers of the whole field of public relations and how to market successfully to the public, how to market anything to the public. And his first major accomplishment was the marketing of cigarette smoking to women in this country in the 1920s. Up until 1920 or so, there was, I think, a very good, very fortunate for the health of women, social taboo against women smoking in public. But Edward Bernays set about breaking that taboo. And the way he did that was he made smoking look glamorous and sexy and very attractive to women. He associated cigarette smoking for women with being independently minded and all of that. And he very simply, what he did was he paid famous women of the day, you know, actresses and performers, socialites, well-known women, to simply be photographed smoking a cigarette in public, and it got marketed to women. So that's part of Edward Bernays, is his background. And isn't it interesting that the United States government called upon him to help them promote water fluoridation to the American public beginning in the 1950s? A man who had written a book on propaganda, in which I have that book, I've read that book, and he not only justifies the use of propaganda, but he glorifies it. And our government called on him to help, not a scientist, not someone who is he was studying fluoride, but someone who is very highly accomplished in the field of propaganda.
This is documented.
Propaganda.
This is, yes. This is not conspiracy.
No, this is actually addressed in the case against fluoride.
Yeah. Where can people look this up?
The case against fluoride. You just Google it. You can buy it from any website that deals in real books. But the mainstream media did not give any attention to this book. You know, the authors of the book, Case Against Fluoride, were hoping that the book would be a game changer because it's so well documented. And
it's an academic study.
Yes. And the thing is, the promoters of water fluoridation, they have never had and they will never have science and truth on their side.
Yeah.
They don't. The case against fluoride, they have they have science and truth on their side. But you know what the promoters of fluoride have on their side? They have big money.
Big money.
And they have political connections on their side. They've got the economic and the political power and authority status with the public on their side.
That goes back with most of these things we're talking about.
Yeah.
When money gets involved, now you have some power, and then you're able to distort the truth. What do you think of, and I'll tell you why I'm bringing this up. Have you heard of doctors like Dr. Sebi?
Yes.
I don't know
yes.
much about him. Personally, I've heard about him. Mm-hmm. People have brought him up. Anytime I talk about health, someone will come up, have you checked out Dr. Mm-hmm. Sebi? Right? Yeah. I did a little bit of research, but he recently, I think not too long ago, he died.
Well, I think it was a few years ago, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what do you know about him?
Well, not very much, other than I was interested enough in him to check out some of his presentations and some of his interviews. And he had deep appreciation and knowledge about the difference between real food and fake food. But, Eddie, I have great appreciation for what I describe as the spectrum of possibilities for human metabolism. There is no one diet that is right for everybody.
So you're on a different, what we call methheb. This is like a school of thought. I like your school. What your school of thought promotes is that it's not a one-size-fits-all.
That's
that makes
right.
sense. So what? Well, one man's food is another man's poison, could be.
Yes, yes. That was identified several thousand years ago by the Roman thinker Lucretius. And, you know, where is the evolution in consciousness? You know,
so that's your methheb, your school of thought.
And someone, you know, who's promoting a particular diet or nutrition plan, you know, for everybody, one particular approach, is not someone I'm very interested in. Dr. Sebi seemed to me, from the presentations and interviews that I heard him give, that he had a very strong bias, I think is the appropriate word, for vegetarian eating. And that works well for some people, but certainly not everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, there are, in fact, the vast majority of people that I work with, they experience the best results in building their health, enhancing their health when they eat, when they find the right balance for them of plant foods and animal foods.
Yeah.
But the vast majority of people that I work with do best when they do include some high quality animal protein and animal fat in their nutrition plan, especially when it comes from healthy, humanely raised animals.
That's what we have to make clear, because a lot of times many of any studies or anything that people point out, you will get eventually sick if you're eating from sick animals, these from farm from the conventional industry.
Yeah. It's just thinking logically. I mean, doesn't that make sense? You know, if you take the time to think things through for yourself, you know,
but you couldn't go wrong. I mean, he was doing some good work. So he ended up dying in jail. There was someone, they say that he had found the cure or he was on his way or something like that regarding AIDS. Mm-hmm. And there was some success in it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if someone even mentioned Magic Johnson or whatnot going through him. Did you hear about that?
No, I don't.
Anyways, he ends up, we believe that the Creator, God Almighty, for every disease, he sent a cure.
Yes.
But we haven't, in this industry, I remember you telling me, we haven't cured anything in over 100 years. There's no
that's the conventional Rockefeller medicine. You know, that's, you know, they're a big part of their business model is, like you mentioned Chris before, you know, who is...
You're one of your patients.
Someone that I give guidance to. You know, I don't like the word patient. For one thing, I'm not a doctor. I'm a nutrition and health educator. And the second thing is, you know, the word patient means to suffer. So, in fact, you know what? I was listening to. I found a doctor recently on YouTube. His name is Dr. Stephen Hotze, and he's got a wellness center down in Texas, and you know what? He refers to all of the people that come to his health center, not as patients. He refers to them as our guests.
As guests,
isn't that lovely?
Yeah,
our guests, and he teaches his guests. What he's doing down there is basically what we were doing at the Optimal Wellness Center. We were teaching people that really the best way to overcome what you could call the darkness of disease or dysfunction is to turn up the light of your inner health. We taught our all of the people that came to us at the Optimal Wellness Center in the glory days of the Optimal Wellness Center basically how to eat healthier, how to live healthier.
This is like tayyibat. This is like, you mentioned halal. There's another aspect of eating tayyibat. Tayyibat is real food, organic food, pure food. This is what we should be eating. And you talk about that. So I mentioned Dr. Sebi because he ended up having some success. People are saying that he had some success. Then he got to start getting a lot of heat because of that. There was someone that was Nipsey or some like hip-hop artist was also going to him. He was really impressed with him. And then he ends up, he was going to put a documentary together, this Nipsey about Dr. Sebi, about his work, to highlight his work. So he's kind of a big name in the hip-hop industry, this Nipsey, if I'm saying it right. I don't listen to the hip hop or any of this stuff anymore. But this is big news. So then he ends up also getting killed.
Why do they kill all holies?
I'm not saying there's anything behind it, but we're just highlighting it. But then it goes back to some of the things that we found. You mentioned Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez. He was someone who had some success in treating cancer.
Yes.
And other doctors.
Yeah, using a nutrition.
And then it doesn't take a Sherlock Holmes and you think, hold on, man, we see like what's going on here. And these people, like, they're coming up, they're doing some work. And all of a sudden, you know, they end up dead.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
A conspiracy now is if we start conspiring, we say, oh, well, it happened like this, this. I'm just asking a question. Just like, you don't need to be Sherlock Holmes. It's like people when they're on the road to, you know, maybe coming up with something of a cure, or then they end up all of a sudden a heart attack. What happened with Nicholas Gonzalez? People can look him up. He was a brilliant mind.
He also had the most documented success.
Most documented, scientific now. He's documenting his stuff.
Yeah, and he had the most documented success of any practitioner in the country in helping people to realize freedom from various types of malignancies with a nutrition-based holistic program.
I remember, and he was a student, he was following, first he went in, if I remember when I was looking into him, he was very skeptical, he was going to go into medical school, he was an investigative journalist or something.
That's right, he was.
And then he was like looking at this like these people are quacks. He started, was it Dr. Kelly?
That's right.
Dr. Kelly said, look in my files. Go ahead. Just look. He had hundreds of files of success stories. Yeah. He said, go ahead. Go examine them. Go ahead. Yeah. And he started to examine it. And he's like, man, this is science. This is science. I mean, this is like proof. Yes. And then he got pulled in and he started to, you know, follow his method and they were having success. That's and then what happened to him?
Well, after he had been in practice for almost 30 years in a very high profile location in New York City, at the age of 67, as I mentioned earlier, Eddie, before we started filming the show, that it's 4 years ago this month that Dr. Gonzalez was found dead. There was no indication that he had any health problems.
Didn't they say heart attack?
Before he died. Well, he was autopsied, and from my understanding, I was following his website for a number of months after he had died to see what was being posted, and he was autopsied, and the autopsy did rule out heart attack. He did not die of a heart attack. But
that's what they said. It was a heart attack.
The cause of death, well, that was the assumption.
That was the assumption.
Because he died very suddenly.
Yeah.
But the as far as I know, and you know, the cause of death was indeterminate. It was not identified. Now, I could be wrong about that, but you know, Dr. Gonzalez was getting more and more vocal in the last years of his life, getting more and more media attention. For instance, a very well-known celebrity who's actually also been the author of a number of best-selling books, the actress, the beautiful actress Suzanne Summers, had featured the work of Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez, and actually a best-selling book that she put together called Knockout, which was about doctors curing cancer with non-toxic methods. And actually,
that's Suzanne
Summers.
Isn't that from that? What is that? She's a famous actress, right?
Right. Yeah. She was in a very popular TV show back in the 70s and 80s, but she has been writing about health issues for the last several decades. Mm-hmm. And anyway,
why did these people usually get just like dismissed as quacks? They just, you know, kick them to the curb and say these people are just there's something wrong with them.
Yeah. Nicholas Gonzalez was.
But if you watch Nicholas Gonzalez, you watch some of his stuff. He's brilliant. I mean, you can see him. Just he's like anyone. Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez. Look it up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's still there's many of his presentations.
Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez.
Short and long on YouTube.
One of his famous students also, Dr. Kelly Brogan, right?
Yes, Dr. Kelly Brogan. She was mentored with him for the last 7 months.
She's having tremendous success.
Yeah,
Helping people, and it's not with drugs. She does. She helps people with food now. She was
She's a psychiatrist,
and they prescribe the most drugs.
Yeah, she specializes in women's psychiatry, and up until about 7 or 8 years ago, she was basically very conventional, just writing prescriptions for. Yeah. You know what the diagnostic
minimal success was. Minimal success.
Yeah, well she
almost no success.
She saw that she wasn't really helping people in the long run, but she was being very successful in practicing the business of psychiatry. But she had her own health crisis after she had her first pregnancy, and she was diagnosed with a condition known as, and I can talk all about this because she's very public with her story, and it is she wrote a book in 2015 called A Mind of Your Own. Which is basically it's that book is basically mostly about how to eat healthier and live
healthier.
I got
the book, yeah,
so
I've read the book, yes.
Right, and so
it's a good book.
So she's been doing basically nutrition and health educating work for the last 7+ years, and having the best success of a career, helping women overcome depression and anxiety and a lot of other so-called mental, emotional, psychological issues. After her first pregnancy, she developed a condition that was labeled as Hashimoto's thyroiditis.
Yeah.
And the medical dogma about that, as it is for almost every type of chronic condition, is, well, we don't know the cause, and there's no cure, but we can give you drugs. And, you know, that's a business model. That's not medical science. That's a business model put in place a long time ago by very, very powerful interests. And it gets promoted to the public as, you know, medical science. But anyway, she worked with a naturopathic doctor who taught her about what real food was and got her on the right nutrition plan for her and, you know, taught her how to eat healthier and how to live healthier. And although the dogma about Hashimoto's thyroiditis is there's no cure for this, within a year she was completely cured of this condition, based not only on her own subjective experience, her health, how she was feeling, but also the blood tests. There are specific markers and blood tests that can identify this condition. And, you know, there are these what are known as thyroid antibodies that get elevated when someone has a problem with their thyroid function, and they get this diagnostic label of Hashimoto's thyroiditis primarily because they have elevations of certain thyroid antibodies, and they're also experiencing low thyroid function and the symptoms related to that, such as, you know, low energy and low mood, and, you know, other symptoms of an underactive thyroid are constipation, dry skin, hair loss, a number of other symptoms can manifest. Yeah.
So you see her.
But she completely overcame that.
She overcame that, and she talks about a lot of cases now that she is actually helping to heal people from many of these
by teaching them how to eat healthier and how to live healthier.
Yeah, just eating what we call tayyibat, eating the real food.
But not just that. I also
lifestyle. She talks about lifestyle. Yes. It's about lifestyle changes, right?
And also, you know,
sleeping well, eating well.
Yeah, moving your body.
Exercise. Like these things that are extremely important. This is what Dr. Sebi also talked about, lifestyle. So just connecting that, Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez. But this one I bring up because Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez, this happened to him. He died. It was
4 years ago.
I think Dr. Sebi, he died not too long ago, and a lot of celebrities were going. I think Michael Jackson and Magic Johnson and many celebrities were
had
going
gone to him over the years.
They were going to him over the years. Yeah. So this got highlighted because of him saying he can cure AIDS. But then who stands in the interest? Someone say, well, why? What's if some people naively can say, like, well, why would someone stop him? Why would anyone, if there's a cure for cancer, if there's a cure for AIDS, isn't that a good thing?
Yeah.
Wouldn't humanity come together to support these people? Some people would claim you're going to get taken out.
Yeah. You know, well, I think it's naive to think that the truth is what dominates in the world. It's a great tragedy of life to come to the realization that there are economic powers and political interests that they have their own agenda, and the truth often gets trampled by you know the most powerful interest in the world.
Think how much money now, let's say Dr. Sebi, he did come up. Let's just hypothetically, if he did, someone like him or someone else, Dr. Gonzalez, they had the cure for cancer. How long have they been trying to cure cancer? How long has it been? I believe it's a $160 billion industry. So just think logically, how many people would be out of a job?
Yeah.
How many organizations would be shut down? How much money would stop coming in for the AIDS pills? Like the pills that are symptom managing what's going on with these diseases. All these things would get shut down because you'd have now a cure. I had a guest come on not too long ago. He said, look, if God Almighty is the most just and fair, he's not going to limit that cure for particular people who have just so much money. It's going to be for everybody, right? Mm-hmm. So the cures are out there, but humans are the ones wreaking havoc. They're the ones stopping it, trying to stop it from coming out. And then, I mean, it's not something far-fetched where people can research. Many people have come out. There's a list of these doctors who are good human beings who are coming out trying to help humanity. Next thing, they're drowned, they're missing.
What is known as suicide.
Suicide. And then their family's like, why would he commit suicide? Like, why would you? Like, all of a sudden, Jim, you have no reason. You're healthy. You're going to get, you go to get fresh food every Tuesdays and Saturdays and what, a few times a week. You're at the farm, you know, you're feeling good. You know, all of a sudden, Jim committed suicide. Now the people that know you, they're like, come on, there's no way Jim would hang himself. Yeah. So this is what happened with many of these people. And it's just interesting. It's like, what's going on, you know? So
well, ultimately, it comes down to, you know, where do you put your trust? I trust my God-given innate intelligence, mm-hmm. and inner capability to be healthy, and or if I manage to injure myself, like I've done a couple times recently, overdoing exercise.
Yeah.
You know, I trust my God-given capability to heal, to strengthen myself where I have developed some weakness, or to balance myself where I'm out of balance. You know, and so, you know, the intelligence to be healthy is there. We have that in every cell of our body. Has this incredible intelligence to know how to produce energy and know how to function properly, as long as the cell is getting all of its needs met, beginning with all of the nutrients necessary to support the cellular needs for energy production. And that's the key issue. You know, the cells can't do anything without energy. They have the intelligence, is always there, but it's up to us to provide our body with all of the nutrients that are necessary for producing energy, and also the nutrients that are needed as building blocks for new cells, for new tissue. So, you know, if you have a damaged knee, or if you know, you have a damaged foot, like my right foot is currently injured. I banged it into a door frame accidentally. My body has an increased need now for the nutrients needed to make new cells, new healthy cells, but it also needs energy in order to do the cleaning away of the, you know, the damaged, injured cells and replacing them with new cells. And that's nutrients. The body needs nutrients, beginning with the oxygen in the air we breathe. Remember, our most important nutrient is oxygen, and that's why we have a constant need to breathe, to inhale. In fact, I teach, Eddie, I don't know that I've ever mentioned this on the Dean Show, but actually our most basic form of nutrition is actually our inhale. We inhale air to get our most important nutrient, oxygen. Oxygen certainly is a nutrient. And so the better you breathe, the better your health. In fact, I've shared this with you for quite some time now. I don't miss a day of breathing exercise. I do breathing exercise.
Breathing, very important.
Every day, because you can improve the
breathing through the stomach, well, instead of the chest.
Well, even breath. Even more basic than that is to simply breathe consciously, where you're actually giving your mental attention to your breath, to your inhale, and you can improve the fullness of your inhale and the completeness of your exhale if you do give conscious attention to this. And you do. There's many different type of breathing exercises, huh? that you can do. I do a variety of different breathing exercises. My favorite one is what I call deep breathing leg raises, where I lay on my back, I inhale as fully as I can through my nose, and then I lift up my legs in good form, and I exhale through my mouth as completely as I can, that feels the best to me. But I do a number of other breathing exercises. Yeah. And my advice to people is, if you know how to do any type of breathing exercise, if you ever learned how to do any type of breathing exercise, you know, from because you're a singer, or because of you've done yoga, or you've done martial arts, or what, if you know of at least one breathing exercise that you feel good with when you do it, that it helps you to feel good, or makes you feel even better. My advice is, prioritize putting the time into doing that breathing exercise every day.
Yeah. It's one of those things,
at least for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes.
It costs you a little bit of time, no side effects.
Right.
Right? At the end, you'll feel relaxed.
Well, it's the most important aspect.
I do after my class, we'll do, and I've had my students come up, we'll do right after the class, we'll do some, you know, stretching and some breathing exercises, and people actually look forward to that.
Yes.
It's relaxing, it's soothing, sure. It's calming, yes. And people can look up, go look at the benefits of breathing properly and breathing exercise, and you'll see a lot of different benefits.
And know that you can improve the quality of your breath.
Yeah, and then that's just one component to healthy lifestyle, and then if you start getting all these components right, then you're going to have more of a chance of living a more optimal, healthy life, mm-hmm. right? Rather than just eating all the fake foods, not getting proper sleep, not developing nutritional integrity, then going and putting more drugs in your body, and then you wonder why, you know, you got all these issues when you're not addressing the root problem, the root cause, lifestyle, right? Yeah. So we've covered a lot. I want to thank you again for being on the program.
Well, you're very welcome, Eddie, and thank you again for inviting me back on the Dean Show. And I hope whoever is watching this program finds some value in it. And you know, God bless all of your viewers. God bless you and your family.
Thank you.
And
God bless you.
Remember nutritional integrity. You carry that with you everywhere you go as a shield against fake food. And the fake food, unfortunately, is everywhere in our American culture and in other cultures too. And so it's not only valuable, it's essential to have appreciation for developing your nutritional integrity. So set the bar high for what is acceptable food and drink for your body, and then be faithful to these standards that you set for yourself. And this will serve your health very, very well for as long as you're around.
Beautiful advice. Thank you very much.
Okay, Eddie. Thanks.
Jim. Thank you, Jim Marlowe, here on The Dean Show. And you heard it. Honor the gift that the Creator has given us, this vehicle that's there to get us through life. Your body's not a garbage can. Don't put garbage in it. Eat real food. Avoid fake food. Develop that nutritional integrity. As Jim Marlowe, health educator, has shared that beautiful advice with us, and we'll see you next time. Share in the comments below some of your takeaways from this program. Share, and we'll see you next time. Until then, peace be with you.